It's that most wonderful time of the day, I always say, when we get to talk to the food mensch, Arthur Schwartz. So, without further ado, the food mensch, Arthur Schwartz.
Hi, Arthur. Here I am.
Good.
You know, I know that not everywhere this is heard. It is spring, but here in Brooklyn, it is full-blown spring, meaning the magnolia tree out my kitchen window is in bloom. The daffodils are in full bloom everywhere. I mean, let me say, I live in a place where after 9/11, thousands of daffodil bulbs were planted in memory of all the people who died. And 20 years later, it's more than 20 years later, right? The whole little hillside across from my house is covered with daffodils. They start out the really yellow ones, and then we get to the paler yellow ones. And finally, there are some white ones that they come up this year. It looks like everything's coming up, in very, very strong spring growth. Anyway, you know, as soon as this happens, I see spring. I want to eat spring, and the thing that I eat the most is something I could actually make in the middle of the winter because I use frozen vegetables. I'm laughing at myself, but I don't know. Even frozen peas and frozen artichoke hearts seem to appeal to me in April. April, by the way, is the height of artichoke season in California. So soon you're going to be seeing some beautiful artichokes in the market. But I've been using these frozen artichoke hearts, not the canned ones. I did play with the canned ones some months ago, and they're not anywhere near as good as frozen ones. But the frozen ones are perfect, really. If anything, they may improve in the freezer because they get a little bit more tender. Anyway, I cook them several different ways, but right now I want to make vignarola. That is the Roman word for the spring vegetable. I have to call it sauté, I guess. But it has other names in other parts of Italy. And I've gotten some mail from listeners who know recipes by their dialect names, or by the name, and in any case, that their grandmother or great-grandmother called it. And that was, way back when, a dialect name, but who knows how it's evolved over the years. But in the case of vignarola, which is what I call it because it's a common word in Rome, frittata in Sicily, if you have a Sicilian family, you may know it by some variation of frittata. Or if you're from Basilicata, you might call it ciaudedda. But let's call it vignarola, V-I-G-N, vignarola. Anyway, my vignarola is with frozen vegetables and fresh asparagus, and I can't believe it, but last week I was able to buy asparagus. Not the greatest in the world, but they were okay. Fresh asparagus for $1.99 a pound. We apparently have no tariffs on asparagus from Peru, so they're staying cheap. However, you got to be careful. The ones that I got for $1.99 a pound, I'm certain were not absolutely fresh. You have to look at the bottom, and this is, by the way, whenever you're buying asparagus, wherever they're from, look at the bottoms. Very often, by the way, in stores, they'll put the bottoms in water and let them stand up straight while they're in water, which is a good thing if they're not left there too long. But you want to look at the bottoms and make sure they're not wrinkly. Wrinkled bottoms mean not fresh asparagus. Now, for $1.99 a pound, I was willing to tolerate a few wrinkly spears of asparagus. In the end, I ended up cutting off, I would say, a third of these spears. But still, at $1.99 a pound, even the top two-thirds was worth it. So the way I cut my asparagus for this, for vignarola and for some other sauté, is on an angle. Cut them on a severe bias. The tips, of course, are very tender, but as you go down the stem, and I don't really like these pencil-thin asparagus. I like a little heft. even a lot of heft, but right now they're not going to be hefty. They're going to be relatively slim. You don't have to peel them or anything, but you do have to take the ends off, even if they're very fresh. You want to snap off the ends. And then I cut them with a large knife on a sharp angle. And you can even cut them one direction and then the other direction, like a trapezoid. And what this does is exposes the inner part of the asparagus, and they cook much quicker. And by the way, very delicious sautéed like that. So the first thing I do, though, making vignarola, is to choose my onion ore, meaning if I have scallions, I might use scallions or spring onions, you could call them. If I don't have that, my next in line would be shallots, a shallot or two minced up. Onion is okay, but it's my last choice in this case. And I don't usually like garlic in this, but sometimes I do. So garlic is good, too. So take a good olive oil and sauté whichever one of those you're using for, let's say, a nice 10-inch pan full. You're going to need one large shallot or three or four chopped scallions or spring onions. And sauté them very briefly, just a little bit, a couple of minutes at the most. And then throw in your frozen artichokes. They don't have to be defrosted. In fact, I prefer them not defrosted because they have a little bit more moisture. And at this point, I just put them in the pan, cover the pan, and let them stew over low heat with whatever onion or a shallot or whatever I put in the pan. And they will be tender in about 10 minutes. You don't want to overcook them because you have yet to add the next ingredient, would be your asparagus. Now add the asparagus, toss them around in the fat in the pan. By the way, there are people who make this with a pork product, meaning pancetta or guanciale. I don't usually. I really just want to taste my vegetables. But sometimes if I have a piece of pancetta that I feel I should be using up anyway, I'll dice up a little piece and put that in. The pancetta that you buy in the supermarket, already diced, has very little funky flavor, so I don't usually use it. But in this case, you could use it because you don't want a whole lot of funky flavor. So I would say that those boxes usually contain 4 ounces. 2 ounces is enough to sauté with your from the beginning, actually. Then after you add the asparagus, cover the pan again, cook the asparagus. It's going to take about 8 or 10 minutes, tossing them once or twice over medium heat. And then the final vegetable are your peas. Now, I find I barely have to cook frozen peas. You put them in the pan, you toss them in the heat. As soon as they heated through, they're ready to eat. And they're at their sweetest. Peas don't need a lot. That said, I've eaten this in people's homes in Italy, and the Italian way is to cook everything until it's gray. We all here in the States like our vegetables to look bright, but in fact, in some cases, they taste better when they're mushy cooked. And by the way, this vignarola is usually made with fava beans. And now, unless you love fava beans, I would not suggest putting them in here because some people don't love. They're bitter. They can be bitter. And if you're using fresh fava beans, you'll have to wait till June or July to make this because I have never seen a local fava bean before the end of June, even though in Rome and in southern Italy, it's a spring vegetable. So it goes into this spring dish. But unless the fava beans are the size of your pinky nail or a small fingernail, they're going to need to be peeled. And that is a chore. Which is why I feel a lot of people in Italy eat raw fava beans. You know, a thing at this time of year is to eat your raw fava beans. You peel them at the table. You know, you're talking, you're peeling. And you eat it with the little chunks of pecorino cheese. It's a very good combination, but I think you have to have grown up eating it to really appreciate it. Anyway, that's going to be my spring dish this week. I guess I'm going to keep an eye out for young lamb. It is the season for young lamb. And also 'tis the season for eggs. Do I dare say eggs? You know, eggs, even at a high price, are a bargain.
The prices have come down considerably, although
and
I will mention...
Yes, there was a sale in my neighborhood the other day for $4.50 a dozen eggs, maximum 4 dozen eggs per person. So, you know, around here, we have a lot of religious people, and they're all making their Easter things, and a lot of Jewish people. Passover recipes are very heavy on the eggs. And I must say, you know, there's an old saying, what grows together goes together. Well, they don't exactly grow together, but certainly asparagus and eggs are at their height at the same time. Asparagus, first growth of the spring, and eggs, as the days get longer, the hens lay more eggs. I'm sure that's one reason why in every religion at this time of year there are a lot of egg worship and egg dishes. And by the way, I just told this to my neighbor who was about to color some Easter eggs, and she didn't know about this. And it's all over the Internet, so I'm not going to give you a formula for it, but you can color your eggs with onion skin, the brown onion skin. I think you put a little vinegar in the water, and you cook the onions in that, and they turn red, a beautiful sort of mahogany red. And that is the traditional way of dyeing Greek Easter eggs. Now, if you want to decorate them, you have to put your design in wax on the shell, and then when you dye it, the design will be white. But I've never done that part. I'm not artistic enough. But I have made the eggs... you know, with the onion skin, and it's fun. It's not only fun, but they look beautiful, and that's what Greeks do. They display them. So I've had a busy cooking week. Can't say usually successful, but one thing I made that I was surprised, it intrigued me. It's and I made this for St. Patrick's Day, so we're talking 2 weeks ago. It's a chocolate cake made with Guinness out. And it's a recipe from Nigella Lawson. You know Nigella, right?
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. She's not my favorite cook, but she is beautiful. And she does try to make everything very sensual, which sometimes is just laughable. But anyway, this cake intrigued me. And I made it. And I reported on it to my niece and nephew, who both bake and both cook. They don't live near each other. I don't think they consult that much on their cooking either. But as soon as I said Nigella Lawson's Guinness cake, chocolate cake, they both said, oh, we wanted to make that too. So apparently it is a huge viral hit on the Internet. Who knew? But anyway, I guess I succumbed. Is that the right word? I succumbed to its charms as well. One of the charms was that you didn't need an electric appliance to make it. You could do the whole thing with a whisk, which always appeals to me. I'm not going to give you the recipe because it's online everywhere. Just go to Nigella Lawson's Chocolate Guinness Cake or Guinness Chocolate Cake. I'm sure you'll find it. And I wasn't in love with it. Bob was not in love with it. We gave half of it to our neighbors across the hall, who are always giving us food. Get to that in a second. And because she cooks all the time. And he, Mike, loved the cake. He gobbled up this cake. So what the cake is a very good, simple chocolate cake, but the Guinness in it gives it a bitter edge, a mysteriously bitter edge, that, you know, I can see becoming very, very appealing, but it didn't appeal that much to me, at least not enough for me to make the cake again. I'm going to move on. But here now, so this young couple down the hall from me appeared a few weeks ago with a loaf of sourdough bread that her name is Sarah Ann, that Sarah Ann made herself and said, I bake all the time, and said, as she handed me this loaf of bread, still warm, by the way, I bake all the time. If you ever want anything baked, just tell me. Well, I didn't, you know, I do my own baking when I want to bake, although, believe me, I appreciate neighbors who bake and give me goodies. And what she gave me a few days later was maybe the best brownie I ever had. And it's a recipe that is also all over the Internet because it's from, and I will say it correctly this time. I was corrected by a listener some weeks ago, Smitten Kitchen. Smitten Kitchen, I must say, has about at least a dozen brownie recipes. So I was confused right off. But Sarah Ann said it's called My Favorite Brownies. Now, My Favorite Brownies are another recipe. I know they're going to be my favorite brownie. My Favorite Brownies are very fudgy, but have a great crust. Let me get the recipe up. Have a great crust. And you can really, we only got 6 of these brownies, and it was enough for 2 days. They're so rich. You can't really eat more than 2, I don't think. So it's a very simple formula. The only thing is you need to have really good chocolate for it. Now, I'm going to get today the best chocolate I can buy in the neighborhood, which is guitar, but also I like calabout. By the way, the word is calabout, is not calabot. It's not French, it ends up, it's Belgian, so it's calabout. You don't even need a whole lot of it, but I don't have any in the house. So we have that, guitar, I don't know what else there is. There's some good chocolate in the markets in my neighborhood, and I'll see what it is. So it's such an easy recipe. You just take 3 ounces of unsweetened chocolate. You know, you could do this with baker's chocolate if that's what you have in your cupboard. It won't be quite as complex flavored as a better chocolate. But anyway, 3 ounces of chocolate. You put it in a bowl with a half a cup, that's one stick, of butter, a half a cup. And you melt these together over simmering or barely simmering water. And when they're and you can stir it a couple times with a whisk, and when it's well melted, whisk in, just gently stirring, 1 1/3 cups of granulated sugar, plain old sugar, and then 2 large eggs. This is all in one bowl. A teaspoon of vanilla extract, but I think I'm going to add a little more. I think maybe my vanilla extract could be better. Depends on your vanilla, 1 teaspoon or a little more. And some salt, which brings up all the flavors. A half a teaspoon should be quite enough. And unless you're using table salt, then even less than a half a teaspoon. And then the flour, 2/3 cup of flour. So you stir together the chocolate and butter until it's melted. Then you stir in the sugar and eggs and vanilla and your big pinch of salt. And finally, when that's all smooth and nice, you can stir in, still using a whisk, 2/3 cup of flour. This all goes into a buttered, or, you know, the original recipe tells you to line the pan with parchment, but I have an 8-inch square pan that is, well, at least in theory, no stick and nothing stuck in it yet. So I'm just going to butter my pan to make sure that I really do get this out. And that's it. You bake these how long do we bake these? At 350. I think they only stay in for like a half an hour or so. I have to double check. Smitten Kitchen has a how-to on these brownies. Not like you'd need a how-to. You don't really. Where's the temperature? I know it's an 8-inch pan, 350 degrees, and 25 to 30 minutes. A toothpick should come out clean from the middle. The edges, of course, cook a little faster. Let these cool completely in the pan before you attempt to take them out, and use an offset spatula to get them out so you don't break them all up. As I said, they're really fudgy and soft in the middle, but they're very crisp on the outside. A really, really good brownie. What else? I had some disasters this week, actually. I'm not going to report on, except that I learned a lesson about eating out, which I certainly should have known since I've been a restaurant critic for most of my life. I ordered things. I went to restaurants that I depend on, but then ordered food that I'd never had before in that restaurant, and it was invariably disappointing. The big, big disappointment is a dish of the moment in the sense that it is a dish of St. Joseph's Day, which was the 19th of March. But, you know, people celebrate these things for weeks. And it's a seasonal dish, and that is spaghetti or bucatini, more appropriately, with a sardine sauce, pasta con sardine, Sicilian, more or less Palermo. I have eaten it many times in Palermo, in Italy in general, and at home. And I never had it worse than I had it at my restaurant the other day, in a place that I go to for reliable Southern Italian food. But it was a special on the menu. It was so bad, I didn't even eat a third of it. I had to eat something. And the bucatini itself were very good. They said they were homemade. I had never seen this bigger bucatini, so it may well have been extruded in the store, in the restaurant. But that was different. So learn a lesson. If you go to a restaurant to eat something that you really like in that restaurant, don't be adventurous. Don't go off. Just stick to what you like.
It's actually bad enough when you go to a restaurant that is truly reliable and you order something truly reliable. And
then it's not.
And then it's not. It's making.
Well, actually,
Marshall,
because we had a moment like that
where
the whole story here. There are several things that I really love in this restaurant. One of them is their veal parmesan. Nobody makes a good veal parmesan anymore, as far as I'm concerned, because they don't use good veal. This place does, and it's really done well. And I had that in mind to order, but my friend Ellen, sitting next to me, ordered the chicken parm, which, of course, is unequal to the veal parm, but with chicken. And I did get to eat a little bit of hers. She felt bad for me that I couldn't eat my pasta. I must say, when I was younger, pasta con le sarde was a very popular thing around this time of the year, but everybody made it from a can of the sauce. It's not really a sauce. It's a condimento. It's a seasoning. And they would buy this, which would be mashed up sardines, with not the bulb fennel that we know so well, but the wild fennel, which is just at this time of the year, it's the first thing that's coming up in the ground in Sicily. And it's sold in the market in big bunches. So you do a lot of things with those fronds, and they're very fragrant, and they're very flavorful. As the bulb fennel is not. So don't put those fronds in your food and expect to get any fennel flavor from them. You won't. So when I made this myself some years ago, I ground up some fennel seed and put it into which, by the way, is the seed of the same plant that gives the green and has a strong flavor, but just to give it that flavor. Then there are currants and pine nuts, of course, sardines, oil, garlic. Anyway, this was all in a can, and all you did was heat it up and toss it on your bucatini. And this was so bad, I thought that's what they had done in this very respectable restaurant. But I went back a few days later for whatever reason. I'm not going into that, but I didn't go to eat. I just went, and I asked, and they swore up and down that it was fresh sardines. Now, it very well might have been, and one of the reasons I ordered it was because there were fresh sardines on the menu. On a grilled fish platter, you got fresh sardines. So I think, oh, well, they have fresh sardines to grill them. They must have fresh sardines to make this seasonal special. Anyway, on to a better eating week.
Right. We could do a whole discussion about menu literacy.
Well, I have my entire career. I wrote a famous column for a newspaper called Nation's Restaurant News about this. It's got to be 30 years ago at least. This is frightening. I try to think back to when did I do that, and it was 40 years ago. How could that be?
I'll give you frightening. Do you know when the actual Guinness Book Nigella recipe came out?
No.
2004.
So there you go, 20-year life.
Right. An entire generation.
Yeah, well, Mike down the hall loved this cake. It was not a bad cake at all. It had a great texture. Got to say, the day after it was baked, it was better because all the Guinness, the cocoa, blah, blah, all melted nicely overnight. And all I did was leave it on the counter covered with some foil to let some air in. I didn't want to close out all the air. So everybody have a good eating week. Spring is just around the corner, if it's not on your corner. And we can, and you know what I'm now waiting for is some good fruit. We're at that in-between season when you can't eat another apple. The citrus is sour. The grapes are, unless they're really expensive, not very good. And I think we have to wait now for the berries in June.
It won't be long now.
Everybody have a great week. I'm going to go and clarify some broth that I made.
Thank you. It is always a pleasure. You have a great week. Love to Bob. And this has been Arthur Schwartz, the Food Mensch on Robin Hood Radio.